Welcome back to the Elon Musk Podcast, where we cover Tesla, SpaceX, Twitter, Neuralink, Boring Company, and everything else Elon Musk. So please take a second, hit the subscribe button so you can get daily updates about everything Elon Musk on your podcast player of choice. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I have with me Neil Thorne today, and we're going to be talking about SpaceX's Starship and the latest news down at Starbase, Texas. How are you doing today, Neil?
Good, Will. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. So we had a static fire of 31 engines at a Starbase recently.
Did we?
Of the Starship.
Oh, I must have missed that.
Booster 7 prototype.
Weird.
I hope not.
So many things are happening. It's easy to miss. No, I definitely saw that. That was incredible. So much fire.
Yeah. So much power, so much fire. And it was supposed to be a 33-engine static fire. Elon Musk said that they didn't fire two of the engines for, we don't know, really know the reasons at this point.
And one of them got shut down right before they fired. They shut that one down on purpose. And then he said the other one just didn't fire at all. So there will be an engine replacement at some point, and maybe two.
Yeah, possibly.
And maybe more. And who knows?
Like, and if they shut do you think they shut the one down on purpose to test to see what it would do if there was a failure before the flight? Do you think it's just a test, possibly? Or do you think that was another?
I would think that they've done that already. I would think they would do that at MacGregor when they're testing the engines. They would figure out how to test that sort of stuff. I think that they shut it down because they recognized a problem with it.
That's what I'm assuming too, yeah. Because there's been speculation that they did it on purpose because they were doing a test. And I wanted to get it out there that there was a possibility, a slim possibility, that was a chance. But more than likely, they saw something wrong with it and were like, this is going to mess everything up. Shut it down before we do this static fire.
Yeah, it could have been automatic too. It could have been a computer that shut it down.
Yep.
Which, let's face it, computers are going to be able to react much faster than humans that do a problem. And have a set number of parameters that they'll operate under, and there's no questioning. So my guess is that a computer shut it down.
Yeah, that's my assumption as well.
We'll never know.
It's really a very good thing.
Yeah.
It's a very good thing.
Very good
we
thing.
We don't want.
Now, I did tweet Elon asking him how many engines. He said that it still had enough engines to make it to orbit. So I tweeted him, how many engines does it actually need to get to orbit? He has not responded yet. So we'll see if that ever comes through.
Yeah, and if they can make it with 31 engines, that's a fantastic thing because they're going to be trying to fly with 33. And if something does happen to go wrong during their first orbital flight test, it's all right. They should shut off an engine.
Yeah, the static fire we saw, they said, was about 50%, a little less than maybe 50% power. And they plan to launch at about 90% power. So if you lose three engines...
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. If you lose three engines, you go up to 92% power, and they compensate.
Yep.
That's nice to have that 10% gap where you can go a little bit stronger on the ones that are running to compensate for the ones that don't.
Yeah, it's a great fail-safe mechanism by SpaceX and their whole engineering team over there. They've thought of everything, and they go to orbit all the time. That's the thing that people don't realize is that the Falcon 9 goes to orbit all the time. And the Falcon Heavy, which has just a few engines less than the Starship, goes to orbit. And so they know how to do it. And they know the parameters that they need to work under.
Yeah, of course.
So even though these are brand new engines.
Falcon 9 having 9 engines, so 27 on 3 boosters. Instead of the 33 here.
Yeah. Just a few less.
Just only a few.
It's such a weird thing. Yeah, just a few. It's such a weird thing to talking about it.
These engines being much more powerful than the Falcon 9 engines.
And they're not tested as many times as the Falcon 9 engines as well. Though they do have a rigorous test schedule, Falcon 9's been in operation for, 10 years or so? Something like that.
A little bit more than that, I think.
So, yeah. So they know the Falcon 9's engines parameters, and these new ones, the Raptors, they're relatively new in the span of time that SpaceX has been operating.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But, tested, but not tested.
Yeah, they know how to do this stuff. Yeah, not tested in orbit yet. So, exactly. Yeah, and Gwynne Shotwell said they're going to do the static fire and then get ready for an orbital flight test. There's a bunch of stuff they have to do before that, of course. And there are some, I think there's some only the engineers at SpaceX know about, but we can speculate about some of the things that will be going on in the future and like the next couple weeks coming up to a possible orbital flight test. And one of them is the Deluge system.
Yep.
Oh, we love it. Yeah.
The Deluge. Yeah, SpaceX has had a whole bunch of tanks delivered recently. Yep. So they're going to be boosting up the Deluge system, which is, of course, water that they spray underneath the rocket as it's being fired to reduce noise, as well as hopefully reduce a little bit of damage to the pad as well.
Yeah, and if you're not familiar, the smoke that you see coming from underneath a rocket, that's not actually smoke. That's just vapor from the engines hitting the water deluge system. So the big plumes of smoke that are miles wide and huge, it's not smoke. It's vapor. It's just water hitting super highly charged engines. And there's some burning going on as well, but definitely more the water vapor. But it also, like Neil said, it stops vibrations as well. Dampens the vibrations, dampens the sound. And since they do have people living nearby there, like about a mile and a half, dampening the sound and the vibrations is a really important thing, especially if you're going to have 90% engine thrust on takeoff. Because what we saw so far, we saw a little bit of concrete get destroyed from this one. But the concrete under the pad, I've noticed in a few images from RGV aerial that there's no damage to the pad underneath the Raptor engine, which I was really surprised about, or very minimal damage. But incredible. I saw some like around it. Yeah, which is insane. But there's damage around the pad with other concrete around the pad, but not directly underneath, which is crazy to think about.
For sure.
Because
the legs are definitely scorched.
Oh, they're charred. Yeah. It looks beautiful.
And I saw a picture today. C. Nunez posted a picture where it looks like a pipe has been ruptured underneath the launch mount as well. I don't know what could have done that. It looks like it came from inside the pipe. It looks like it might have been overpressure inside the pipe or something. But anyway, easily replace it. So in the open, that's the beauty of this launch mount is that everything's out there. It's easy to access and easy to change and fix. So shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, and there's workers there 24/7 fixing these things. So probably next few days, we'll see somebody up there with a giant pipe.
Yeah. I mean, it could be an illusion. It might not be a ruptured pipe there, but it looks like it's ruptured to me.
Yeah, but I saw the image. It either looks like a rupture or some hold down points for it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely some damage. I think they expect that.
It looks, oh yeah.
But every static fire, every launch attempt, they'll reduce all this problems because they'll figure out how to get around them. So it should be good.
Yeah, that's why it's a test vehicle. Like this whole thing is a test. It's a test bed for future spaceflight because once they get done here, they're going to move everything over to Kennedy Space Center and they'll have more launch attempts over there in the future. But right now they're just very focused on this orbital flight test, which, like I said before, may happen. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know. Elon said March, but
didn't Gwynne indicate March as well?
Yeah, but it always seems like whenever Elon or somebody says we're ready for March or we're ready to go, it seems like maybe not. But I don't know. I'm a little bit skeptical still of their timelines. But once Gwynne said something, I was like, ooh, okay, this is a possibility now. Because Gwynne's in charge.
Gwynne's in charge. She's in charge of Starbase. Yeah. She's the one who knows what's going on. And she's doesn't have a track record of being ahead of the game. She knows her dates are pretty set.
Right. And she didn't just say it in a tweet. She said it at a conference with a bunch of other very important spaceflight reporters and other people in the industry. So I don't think she'd be blowing smoke at all. I think
it's also important to note that those comments were made before the static fire, and who knows if this static fire brought something up in the data that they're probably still analyzing. brought something up that's going to change that. We haven't heard it, but it's possible that something changed.
Yeah, it's a high possibility that we might not get a launch in March, but it's okay. April, May, June rolls around and we haven't had a launch yet.
No, that's too
long. It's fine because they're learning every time they do.
That's too far away. I don't want to wait that long.
I don't want to wait either. I would love if we could get a March launch. That would be amazing. I would love it. But the if they do have to wait, if they do have to go through 5 or 6 more tests of the launch mount or static fires or something like that just to get it perfect, that's completely okay in SpaceX's book too. They can do, they need to do what they need to do in order to have a very successful first flight. And even Bill Nelson, who's the head of NASA, said that it's great and the static fire was a success. If you have somebody like Bill Nelson in the mix saying that SpaceX is doing the right thing, I think they're on the right course. And Bill Nelson said it on a tweet, and that's a pretty big deal for this guy.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that it's important that this orbital flight works for SpaceX. I think that the more I live with this, the more I think about it, they want this thing to go across 100% flawlessly. They know how to get to orbit. They've been to orbit hundreds of times. So that's not the issue. This is not a new company trying to figure out orbital mechanics. This is an established company that has a new rocket, and they're going to do everything they possibly can to get this thing up there successfully without any issues. I think that's the goal, and I think anything less than that, they're not going to be very happy with it. Obviously, if something happens, then it happens, but I think that they're expecting this thing to work.
Yeah.
And I think that Gwynne's expecting the next flight to happen in 2 months from that point. I think that they're probably expecting a very quick rollout. Like, they've got rockets backed up now, right? They've got 25 sitting there ready to go. They've got 26 about to start testing. I'm sure they've got pieces and parts of other rockets sitting in the build area to get going as well. And they're just sitting on them. They're not building them because there's nowhere to put them. So I think that they're ready to ramp up. They've got the Booster 9 ready to go. And yeah, I think they're ready to start this program in earnest.
I think so too. And building the machine that builds the machine is the important part. The assembly line that builds these rockets, that's where they're at right now. The testing is a huge undertaking, but everything that gets these rockets to the test pad is way more important than the rocket themselves, because once they get the manufacturing done properly and they can roll these things out every few weeks, man, Gwynne said they want to do 100 to 200 flights before they put people in one of these things.
That's right.
So they only have a few years before Artemis 3.
Yeah. And they also want to meet those deadlines. So that's only, like, we're talking 50 flights a year.
Yeah.
Including this year.
Yeah.
Let's see this rocket going up 4-5 times a month.
Yeah, if they need to make those deadlines, if they want to get 100 flights before they put people. That's what they did with Falcon. They sent cargo numerous times to the space station before they had a human rated capsule ready. Then they had to do test flights of the capsule. They had to do test flights with people in them. So they sent Bob and Doug to the space station. Bob and Doug came back down successfully, and then NASA was like, "All right,
how brave are those guys, eh?"
Oh my God, legends.
Legends, like as any test pilot is, really. Like, unbelievable risk that they take every day, kissing their families goodbye in the morning, and who knows at that point, right? Like, unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable guys.
Yeah, Bob and Doug are champs in my book. So they're going to have to go through something like that, too. Like, they're going to have to send some people to orbit, and then, it's a possibility that they send some test pilots, we don't know who, to orbit quite yet. Jared Isaacman, maybe, but more than likely somebody else. They'll pick somebody else because Jared has a whole future with SpaceX that they probably should be worried about, because he has a bunch of missions coming up. And then we have, what if they have to get 100 to 200 flights? Do they have enough FAA? Are they cleared that for that many flights from Texas? I thought it was only 5 flights per year.
Oh, they won't all go from Texas for sure. No, they're probably 75% built their another tower in Florida on 39A. Yeah. And then they also have don't quote me on this, pad 40 in Cape, where they're planning on probably building 2 more towers. So they'll be able to fly from three different towers in Florida before you know
that it. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. So now, there's no guarantee they're going to do two towers at 40, but there's space for it. So, quote-unquote, space for it.
Yeah.
There's no reason why they couldn't. And they've got got the tankers they were talking about as well. Not the tankers, the oil platforms. They've mothballed for now, but at some point they could revisit that and have those floating launches as well.
Yeah. And the only problem that I can see from Kennedy Space Center is the other traffic, because they're going to have to slot in times in between other launches that are going on with either their own Falcon 9s flying or other things going to the space station or satellite launches or whatever else is at Kennedy Space Center.
Answer this question for me, Will. Who else is launching right now?
Well,
when's the last time they launched, though? How many contracts do they have?
Yeah.
How many contracts do ULA have right now? Or is it all going to SpaceX right now?
Everything SpaceX, yeah. So SpaceX could possibly...
They're cheaper. Because of reusability.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know that there's a lot of traffic down there they have to worry about.
And they're going to be
on the pads we're talking about, right?
That's true.
The pads that we're talking about building these launch mounts on. LA launches from somewhere else, and even so does the HLS. So,
yeah. If they start moving Starlink launches to Starships, they won't really need as many Falcon 9 launches from Kennedy Space Center. They'll just switch them over to a Starship.
Yep.
So they'll do them all faster. The Falcon 9s. Yeah, exactly. And SpaceX's Starship can hold a lot more than a Falcon 9 as far as Starlinks go. They'll just continuously launch. Yeah, there's
they
not
just
that
put
much
the Falcon 9 inside of several Falcon 9s inside of this and launch them all at once.
Yeah, it's a possibility. Yeah, it's a possibility. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? Maybe their first test article inside of a Starship would be a Falcon 9. That'd be amazing.
They're about 4 meters wide, Falcon 9. So theoretically, they may fit three at least, if not four, in the top with some space to spare.
Yeah, that would be ridiculous. That would be so funny. No, they wouldn't do that. It would be funny. I think that would be something that Elon would do as a funny goof gag kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like, already launched a car, so what next?
Starship is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's just so much possibility at Kennedy Space Center, and there's so much possibility at Texas as well. But of course, like you were saying, there's no real flights coming out of Kennedy right now, other than what I can see is, I'm just looking at one now, Terran 1 from Cape Canaveral, there's Vandenberg, SLC 40, Falcon 9. These are all Falcon 9s.
Yep.
ULA Delta Heavy, the Cape.
When does that
SLC 37. That's in March. So yeah, nothing's going to stop SpaceX. This is amazing.
No, they've proven they can launch these things really quickly after each other. I think the last one was a record. Was it between the last two launches? It was like 5 days or something. If ULA has something to launch, go ahead and launch it. We'll just set up tomorrow and set it up and send it to space the next day. These things are made for rapid reusability, which has to equal rapid setup as well. They're one and the same. So I think that it's just a matter of saying, okay, we'll work around your schedule.
Yeah, the only thing I can see here is Falcon 9s and Falcon Heavies and that couple of ULA launches and Starliner. Starliner's in April, but yeah, if SpaceX wants to spend the money Starliner's going to be great too. That's going to be a good one, but that's it. Yeah. SpaceX, you're right. They have a monopoly. They have the market
starting
share
to become a monopoly for sure.
Yeah.
And ULA's got to start to figure out how to reuse some stuff.
Yeah. Because they
reuse something. The way they're launching the way they're launching right now is, it's old technology, and you can't get away with that anymore. The only reason that NASA can get away with it with the HLS is that, well, they're NASA.
Yep.
So,
exactly. It's a jobs program.
Needs to improve.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And
not just for themselves, but for
100% agree with that. 100% agree with that. Is moving forward. It's like people have likened it to Henry Ford when he built the first automobile in the assembly line, and then everybody got a car. It took a little while for horses to go away, but then everybody had a car, and then what do you do? if you don't have a car anymore. That's like where ULA and the other people are at this point, because they're just not that. They're old school. They're the horses of the space flight industry. And SpaceX is the Henry Ford in the
for sure.
at this point.
So, yeah.
I'm looking through all these launches. There's nothing.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. If you break down, I haven't done this math. I don't have it in front of me, so don't ask for it. But if you break down the cost to get something to orbit through this fully reusable, 100% reusable spacecraft, it's not outside the realm of possibility that you and I could send something to space. As far as costs go, right? It's still going to cost several tens of thousands of dollars, but it's not millions of dollars, that's for sure. If we wanted to send a briefcase of our comic books up to space, we could probably do that for $20,000, $30,000 or something. And that's so accessible. Not that we want to do that, or not that everybody in the world should be able to do that because there's too much stuff up there, but it's so cheap now, or will be so cheap.
Yeah, I'm just looking at if you want to send, let's just say, 10 kilograms to orbit, to low Earth orbit, it's about 0.3 mil to get up there on a rideshare, a small sat rideshare. But it says dedicated rideshare missions as low as on a Falcon 9, $275,000 for a rideshare for a Falcon 9. Basically, just raise some money somehow. If you have
$300,000, I'm talking about Starship, which is going to be cheaper.
It's going to be significantly lower.
Yeah, obviously they need to fill it.
There's going to be so much room.
Yeah, it's like sending a container ship across the ocean. You got to fill the container. They're not going to send a container ship with half the containers that are half full. It's not worth the money. But if they can fill a Starship with cargo or satellites or whatever has to go up there, then it just gets cheaper as more people add on to it.
Yep.
To the 150 tons.
I think initially they'll do Starlink just to mitigate risk for other people's payloads.
Absolutely.
But then once other spaceflight companies see, or satellite companies see, that SpaceX can successfully launch Starlinks, they're going to jump on board pretty soon thereafter. And I think it's going to be a game changer for the spaceflight industry. And there's going to be so much money rolling in that will fund the Starship and the 500 whatever launches they're going to do every year. Knowing SpaceX, that's what's going to happen in the future.
There's definitely people out there with more imagination than I have. Personally, I question how much we need to get into space from a business standpoint. Like, how many satellites do people really need up there? How much is Starship going to actually take up there? Obviously, Starlink's going to fill any gaps where they don't have cargo, rideshare programs and stuff like that. But beyond that, certainly the ISS or whatever its successor is, we'll need cargo taken up. We need to go to the moon. We'll need cargo for that, Mars after that. But I wonder how many satellites are actually needed up there that will fill the Starship up constantly.
We don't see constant flights of satellites every single day from Kennedy Space Center on a Falcon 9. It's once, maybe twice a month, something like that.
Which is taking up a fraction of the weight.
So what I think is happening is SpaceX is going into business with themselves here. And they're spending all the money building a Starship so they can build the Starlink, the satellite program, the whole thing. And then they're going to IPO the Starlink program and make money hand over fist with Starlink so they can continue building Starships. And
so Starlink pays for Starship, which pays for Starlink. Is this a big pyramid scheme? Is this what you're telling me? Starship's a pyramid scheme?
I think
so.
I think it's an MLM. Yeah. Next thing you know. Next thing you know, Elon Musk going to be knocking on the door with Tupperware.
Yeah.
And hey, we're going to have a Tupperware party. No, businesses do that all the time, though. They have separate divisions that buy other things from other divisions, and they treat them as two separate businesses, but they're basically in business with themselves. So as much as I would love, Tesla and SpaceX do that already. They have Tesla parts and SpaceX rockets.
For sure.
Some actuators and some batteries and stuff.
Yeah, batteries and actuators, for sure.
Companies work together.
That's what's running the fins. They're Tesla, Tesla actuators and batteries. So, yeah.
I think there's some gimballing on some rockets that will be taken care of with some Tesla parts as well in the future. I think that's what I read somewhere, but I can't remember exactly what it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I heard them changing over from the old system to Tesla parts, yeah. From hydraulics to actual motors.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
If a company's good at something.
Sorry?
Hire them. I was saying if one company's good at something, just hire them to do it. If Tesla's the best at it, hire Tesla.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
If it works there, it'll work here.
Yep.
No reason to reinvent anything.
Yeah. So what's next then down at Starbase? We have a couple road closures that were canceled from Monday and Tuesday of this week. Wednesday looks like it's still on, but you said you mentioned ship 26 is down there.
Yeah, we've got ship 25 on one of the pads, on one of the test pads, and ship 26 right beside it. It's become ho-hum to see two starships down there now. But at one point, we were over the moon to see two of them down there at the same time. But yeah, 25 is it's just waiting. I think it's passed most of its tests. It needs to static fire a few more times. But it's really just sitting there waiting for 24 to get out of the way. 26 is a different vehicle. 26 is missing a few things, right?
Yeah, no heat shield, no fins.
No heat shield, no fins. And what does that say, though? What does that mean?
Is that a tanker? Or is it a test? If it's a structural test of a new body?
Yeah, it's hard to know.
Numerous things.
It's hard to know. But one thing for sure is it's not coming back. Not in one piece, anyway. It doesn't have have the heat shield to get through the atmosphere, and then it doesn't have the fins to land. So this is a one-way trip for 26. If it actually makes it up, it could just be something they're working on land.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that because I saw reports that there's different structure on the inside of the ship for ship 26.
Oh, yeah?
Compared to 24 or 25. I read that, I think it was on NASA Space Flight Forums, and there was there's speculation that it is a test article for a tanker or some sort of a depot of some sort. And to everybody out there listening that doesn't know what the depot and the tanker that I'm talking about is, SpaceX is going to have to refuel the Starship in orbit in order to get the Starship to the moon or to Mars. And they're going to have a fuel depot that these tankers will fly to. These tankers will fly to a depot, push all their extra fuel into these depots, and then a Starship will dock with that, and then we'll go on its merry way after it fuels up. But this could be the inner workings of one of those kinds of ships, because they have to, there's no room for cargo or anything like that, so it's just basically just a tube with fuel, like a fuel tube.
Yeah, and there's a lot of testing that has to happen with that. They need to be able to move that fuel in space. There's no gravity in this thing in orbit, so they have to figure out a whole bunch of physics there to get this fuel to move in the right way and empty itself. So essentially they're going to have, when they refuel in orbit, they'll need, I think it was 10 launches to refuel that spacecraft in orbit. After that spacecraft launches and pushes itself into orbit, it'll have basically 1/10 the fuel that the rocket needs to get to the moon, or the other starship that comes will need to get to the moon. It's a lot of launches.
Yeah. And if you think of what Gwynne was saying, they have to do 100 or 200 launches in order to make to have crewed flight. Is she talking about 100 fuel tanker launches or depot launches, Starship crew launches? Because the booster could launch 100 times and be completely fine with the tankers. But if they only do a few crew capsule launches every year, like 5 or 10, which seems ridiculous, like just a few, 5 or 10 or 20 or 30.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think getting to orbit's easy. I think SpaceX has done that many times, and you're not really proving anything putting a tanker into orbit, I don't think. Whereas you are definitely proving something to land this vehicle again and be consistent as where it's landing and catch it with this tower as they want to do. So I think that those are the 100 launches they want to do, or Gwynne wants to do, before this thing carries people. They want to make sure that this thing can get back down to the ground and land safely. Not land, get caught safely.
Which is still ridiculous.
Yeah, we'll have to see it. We'll have to see it in action. Because if all we've seen from this landing vehicle is that it landed once.
And it wasn't even a good landing.
You know, SN15 landed once. Actually, one of the other ones landed and then exploded. But which you don't want either. But I understand that they don't want to they don't want to land it. They don't want to prove that they can land it because they're not going to land it. They're going to catch it. But you still have to prove that you can catch it. And you still have to prove that the rocket can be accurate enough in its landing to be. And I think that's got to be done 100 times. I certainly wouldn't get in it before they prove that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. So while we're having this conversation, and I thought about this a lot over the last 2 weeks of how they're going to, like, just the mindset shift for everybody in the spaceflight industry of, oh, yeah, we're just going to drop a capsule into the ocean and have some parachutes and stuff, to, oh, no, we're going to do like this kick turn move and then hover you over these arms and then it's going to be fine. Like, you're just going to float down and you're going to land on these arms. They're going to move you to the side, lower you down.
Just a little bump at the end.
Yeah, just a little quick. What was it? 5 to 10 G's or something like that. I think somebody did the math. It was some decent amount of G's.
Yeah.
For the flip move. But it just blows my mind to think that they're going to be doing 100 of those. And probably not. The tower's probably not going to survive every single one of those.
Not at the beginning, no.
I'm assuming they're going to do 20 or 30 of these flights with hover landings in the ocean or on some sort of mark in the ocean somewhere or in the Gulf of Mexico or something.
I can see them doing mock-ups as well. They've got a landing pad here in Texas, there in Texas. I can see them doing a mock-up, sort of a very skeleton frame system to aim at over the launch. Over the landing pad, where they can just say, okay, yep, we are within 5 feet of our mark, or we missed it by 20 feet, or whatever, before they even get close to the tower.
Yeah, there's a possibility, too. Yeah, if they inch closer and closer, I think they have to worry about if they're starting to land at, or starting to catch, I should say, at Texas, is the environmental stuff. And once they, if they mess up any of the environmental stuff, the FAA might come after them or the environmental groups and stuff. And that may hold them up for years, possibly in court, trying to figure that stuff out.
They must have some of that stuff.
And I think they're going to figure it out.
Yeah, they must have some of that stuff worked out by now. We've been sitting on this sort of environmental approval for a long time. They must have, it's not just, this is for the next launch. This must be worked out through for all launches. Here are the parameters you need to work within and what you need to protect, and anything beyond that, you're going to be fined of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they continue to do it, like that's where I was going to go with that, is if they continue to do it. If they do it once, they're like, okay, we understand. Like, that's part of the prototyping and part of the landing system. We get it. But if they continually do it, if they do it, you know, 5 times and they haven't gotten anywhere with it, and there's shrapnel everywhere and something, the environment gets damaged or some species down there get damaged, then they might have to do another callback to that. But I think they're going to be okay with it. I think they'll take it very easily because Gwynne knows the billions of dollars that NASA spends on the Starship program for the HLS. She knows that money is important, and she knows that getting this right is the most important thing for human spaceflight and spaceflight in general pretty much ever, I think.
Yeah.
I think absolutely. I think it's one of the most important rockets of all time. So I think they're going to take their time with it and get all those ducks in a row, so to speak, before they do any sort of test landings at the site. But once they figure that out, man, it's going to be crazy. And we're going to see 100 flights a year. Just catch it every other day. Almost every other day. If they 365 days in a year, it'll be every 3-4 days. That they do a flight. They might even do a couple flights per day.
Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. Can't wait to see it. It's interesting. I'm watching NASA space flights live view right now. There are 6 lifts underneath the launch mount right now that I can see. So there's got a lot of people working on it.
Okay. And I know they were going
to. They're working on the mount, not the, the booster.
Not the engines.
One of them might be looking at the engines, but the rest are on the mount.
Okay. 6 lifts. Wow. And each one of those lifts probably carries 2 or 3 people because you usually have to have a buddy system.
Oh, for sure. I've seen people walking around as well on top. So there's definitely more going on than that. But it's just interesting to see how much work's going on.
It was only a few days ago, 4 days ago since the static fire. So inspections were happening probably the day after. They were gathering data, and now they're taking that data and just putting it into action. What broke? What didn't break? What do we see? What's a liability here? What can we fix? We'll have to keep an eye on that pipe that you saw earlier. See if they replace that or see if they make some changes to it, because it looked broken to me.
Definitely.
It looks pretty blown out. Yeah, something happened to it.
Yeah.
So in the next
few days. But exciting times.
Yeah, next few days, ship 25, maybe something, but ship 26 more than likely doing a cryo or pressure test. But we'll see what happens down at the pad. If the pad is more important than the ships, then they'll definitely continue working on the pad than ship 26 and then push these off probably till next week, because there's no other road closures this week at all.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, that they're putting their resources into the launch mount right now. And they'll get back to it. But there's no rush on 26. We got to get rid of 24 and 25 before that's a problem.
Exactly. All right. I think we covered pretty much it. Is there anything else about Starship that we should know about? We did a pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's good.
I think we're pretty good.
Can't think of anything else right now.
Yeah, I think we're solid for now. If we get any more information, make sure to subscribe to the show, everybody, because you get more of these kind of informational overloads of Starship once per week with me and Neil, with Starbase updates. So please take a second and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. Thanks, Neil, for joining me today, and I'll see you in the next one.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Elon Musk podcast, brought to you by Stage Zero Productions. My name is Will Walden. I'm the host of the show. And if you want to help support the show, please take a second and subscribe on whatever podcast platform that you're listening on right now. And also, if you want to help us even further, we have a Patreon, so you can check out the link down below and help us out in a more significant sense. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.